Hey coach, Xenia Wood here, owner and founder of Swift Coaches and Swift Movement Academy. Our vision is to live in a world where health business owners turn their passions into profits and create financial freedom guilt-free. And for all of those exercise and rehab professionals to finally feel confident as fuck in their technical skills, and we never again see another coach leave the industry because of it. What you're about to hear is a bite-sized, jam-packed version of one of our episodes. So if you're looking to learn swiftly, this mini episode is for you. Let's dive straight in.
The human body, it's an interesting thing, and it's nothing but contradictions and conflicts. And so what we need to recognize is no programming is one size fits all. We need to understand that we need to have a framework or an anchor system that we can bring every person who comes into us back to this systematic approach, so that then we can take that and individualize it to each person. You know, and going back to what you said earlier, which were these lovely words, and this constant idea of questioning, you know, why is, you know, we need to understand that each person is different, you know, and there is no right and wrong answer. There's just better and worst options. So if we work to a very rigid approach, which we get when we look at academic studies, which we 100% have, without an academic study, we don't have the basis by which we can make decisions. But when we work to a very regimented understanding of this is an injury and this is how you treat it, the problem is the person who comes in front of you is nothing but contradictions and variables. You know, so when we look at study and we look at all the research, and research says this, research says this, the problem with the research is, in order for the research to get published and to be determined viable within the industry, we must control every variable except for the variable that we're testing. And then if I can get a result based on that variable, then I can deem my research successful or unsuccessful. The problem is every person who sits in front of you is just an infinite amount of variables. So we need to adapt that understanding that there is no right and wrong. There is no absolute do this or everything else is going to cause problems. We need to recognize that we need to be fluent, and we need to be manageable with our patients. And we need to look at them as going, there's a better and there's a worst option. So the goal with this systematic approach is to determine which is the best option for that individual person. So I guess another way of looking at it is, you know, at uni, we learn the idea behind the objective questioning and objective understanding and objective testing protocols. You know, this is this, this is this. Whereas we need to learn to marry the objective and the subjective. So what we don't do a lot of is understanding what the person who comes in tells you. So a lot of the system that I try to develop and try and that I've worked from and that I teach my guys to work from is probably more from the subjective side as opposed to the objective. Objective is easy. You know, knee to wall is a knee to wall is a knee to wall with whoever you do it. You know, your numbers are your numbers are your numbers. They're set guidelines. The subjective is where all the information comes from. So our goal as good clinicians is to be that person who can connect the subjective to the objective. Take the random ramblings of a patient, who are magnificent and brilliant, not as a criticism, but the random ramblings of a patient who comes in and goes, my shoulder hurts here when I kind of do this, but I'm not sure what it's like with this. But when I'm in this weird position, this happened, and I can't remember when it happened, but it's kind of been going on for 3 weeks, but then it was gone for a bit, but now it's kind of come back. But actually, now that I mentioned it, it's 6 months ago. You know what I mean? So, but in that, there's so much information that we can gain towards this subjective program, this framework, what goes on. And then what we need is we need this link between that subjective ramblings to putting it into the objective scientific study that we've done. Pain inhibition and movement inhibition are real. The more pain we have, the more the brain is going to prevent you from doing the movements that make me go into pain. So what it's going to do is it's going to shut off the muscles to a certain extent to prevent flexion, extension, whatever it may be. And it will avoid the movement that impacts on, let's say, that labrum, and then you're going to cheat. That's where cheat movements come from. If you have a structural problem that's causing pain, if we don't settle that pain down, you're just always going to be pushing the car with the handbrake on. Like, you're just not going to be moving forward. It doesn't detract from the fact that that's not what I need. That's not the problem. I need to address cause. But in very simple terms, it might mean that I will select slightly easier one-dimensional exercises with limited range and minimal loading to allow that to settle until I go into the big, big stuff. So I'm almost laying the groundwork for the shit that I want to do later on, which is actually going to fix their problem.
And it's not resting. It's
not resting.
It's just reducing load or putting it into a safe environment so that we're still,
Pushing to those points, because we've got to remember is your body's very smart at protecting itself. Generally, you've got about 10 to 15% range of motion after pain comes on. And the longer we leave it non-movement, that range of motion is going to get lower and lower and lower. And that pain is going to come on earlier and earlier and earlier. A perfect example is in the extreme version is in arthritis. You get an arthritic flare up, your knee hurts, you don't do anything. That's now your new range of motion. And then you're just going to get tighter and less and less and less and less. You've got about a 10, 15% range of motion you can push into after pain comes on to maintain normal joint happiness. So, you know, it's about knowing how far I can push you. So I use special tests from that point of view. How far can I push you? What do I need to be aware of? Or is that structure just super shitty that I need to make sure it settles before I get into the crux of what I need to do? So what's my groundwork? What's my, if you like, my rudimentary beginning program? And that's what we recognize. We do special tests and nothing comes up special. You're like, great. The main worrying factors, your ACL is fine, your labrum's fine. I, to a certain extent, as long as I'm not making you curl up in a corner crying in pain, I can push you a hell of a lot more. I can do a lot more muscle control work than I can if that structure's angry. If that structure's angry, you know, depending on what it is and blood supply and how quick you can get healing factors to settle it, I gotta adjust. So I use special tests not as a diagnosis, but as a means of telling me starting points with programs and how much I can push you. The question you've got to ask yourself is twofold. One, has this person has a training history? Have they done things in the past? Have they played sport? They'll have a way better body awareness, way better neurological strengthening. Your ability to progress through their rehab program will be significantly better because their neurological recruitment is going to be better. The other aspect of it as well is the length of time that that person has been in pain or injured. Because the longer they've been in pain and injured, the longer they've had dysfunctional movement patterns, the more they've unlearned how to should move, the more you've got to select and you've got to go through the pathways of muscle activation, make sure everything is firing, neurological development, and then strengthen. And one of the shortfalls that we have from a rehab programming side of view is we're really good at going, oh, your issue is a agonist-antagonist. Your hamstrings are too weak. Your quads are too strong. The problem then arises is we give that person the wrong exercise selection. They're either too complex and the body doesn't have the underlying baseline to be able to do the movements and it creates problems. And then the body goes, I don't have to do it. And you're always struggling. Or, which I see a lot of, we give them shit that's too fucking easy. And their body is, it's easy for them to do the basic simple rehab exercises. So they never progress because you're not actually challenging them. I mean, I see this all the time and it amuses me. I deal with a lot of the powerlifters. You know, I've got five guys that have been down at Pro Raw. I look at, you know, guys that have got, you know, girls that have got 400, 500 totals, you know, guys that are up in 800 totals, you know, and they come in with a shoulder problem or a bit of pain, anterior pain, you know. There is no TheraBand on this fucking planet strong enough to develop their posterior delt to compensate for the fact that that girl can bench 160 kilos. This is just not going to happen. So I'm giving them these small TheraBand banded exercises, and you're like, you're just wasting your time. Their training experience, their muscle activation neural strength is way beyond that exercise. So they don't progress any further. We're not addressing that. So the idea behind the movement is more about not like flexion extension. It's more about body awareness. Do I have effective muscle activation? Do I know how to engage my quads, my hamstrings, my glutes. Do I have that baseline? And then do I know how to engage them in a coordinated fashion? And then have they strengthened them in the past? Because if they don't, I need to figure out where they sit. So my exercise selection must match their ability to do the exercise. If I've got a 42-year-old accountant who's never trained a day in their life and they're getting anterior knee pain because they joined CrossFit 8 weeks ago because they did a stress test at work and they're overweight and the doctor says you need to fucking sort your life out, and they joined CrossFit and now they're getting anterior knee pain. Yeah. And I'm going, oh, your problem is your glutes and your hamstrings aren't strong enough and your posterior engagement isn't great and you can't sit back in your heels. The problem is you're not using your hips, you're bending at your knees, you're driving your knees forward and all the loads hinging on your patella tendon, which is irritating it. Me giving that person a pistol squat or even a pendulum squat to rectify neurological functioning is only going to create more problems because they couldn't do the hip tilt to start with. They didn't have that complex neurological recruitment. Now, yes, absolutely. Sprinter squat to get, you know, lateral hip stability and, you know, a single leg RDL to bring in upper range eccentric control of hamstrings is fucking wonderful. And it is the right exercise to do to help with that problem. The issue is old mate's never done that. So he's never going to be able to do that. So you have to use that movement ability to try to get them to the point that you're prescribing the right complexity of exercise to match, get the right complexity of exercise to match the right kind of muscle development that you need. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I guess what I'm hearing is the people who are quite low level, don't give them shit that's complex compound movements. They probably need to start a little more isolated. And then the people who are doing shit like 160 kilo bench presses, make sure you're not just giving them a fucking TheraBand external rotation, like throw them under some progressive 100%. Load. Is that?
Yeah. And that's it. To be honest with you, that's exactly right. And it's about fucking dumbing it down. There's no, and that's what I mean. It's not rocket science. It's effective, rational and clinical reasoning behind your exercise selection. Like, that's not rocket science, but it's about knowing it and applying it to how you program it.
Did you find something valuable in this episode? If so, I'd like to ask a tiny favor. If you have 30 seconds now, I'd love you to follow or share the podcast. That way we can continue to bring you more real, raw and uncensored stories from industry leaders. We also love hearing from you and what you loved about every episode. The best way to reach out is to DM me personally on Instagram @SwiftCoachesAcademy. Until next time, and in whatever you do, move swiftly.